Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Mike Adams, attorney for appellant. And let me say at the outset, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Please be aware that the time on the clock is your total time.
I understand.
Okay.
Let me then ask the court if the court has any particular concerns it would like me to focus upon before I move into my prepared remarks.
No, but we'll feel free. We'll feel free to interject if we have some. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. As indicated in the my briefing, we're pursuing two alternative theories to conclude that the trial court erred in granting the motion for summary judgment. The first being equitable estoppel, the second being equitable tolling, both supporting a conclusion that my client's FMLA rights were interfered with. Now, let me start with equitable estoppel. Granted, the Nathan case decided by the Ninth Circuit a good number of years ago is an obstacle that needs to be addressed. At least as it has been construed in subsequent cases to indicate that some sort of intent to deceive or a wrongful state of mind by the person whose actions are being relied upon is necessary. And as I've contended, there are two ways around that obstacle. The first, because we're not contending here that there was any intent to deceive on the part of the Covenant personnel employees that were involved. We're granting that. However, the first way around the Nathan case is to say, subsequent to the decision of that case, the U.S. Supreme Court in Heckler enunciated a point of federal common law by incorporating into the common law the restatement definition of equitable estoppel in which no requisite state of mind for the person whose actions or words are being relied upon is necessary.
But that doesn't work very well, does it?
I'm sorry?
That doesn't work very well, though, does it? Because we seem to have gone on citing Nathan even after that. So as far as the panel is concerned, that doesn't help, does it?
Well,
we keep saying Nathan is the rule.
And I appreciate
that. And maybe the Ninth Circuit's wrong, but we can't do anything about that today. How about number two?
And the second way around Nathan is to interpret it in the literal words of its own holding. While some courts or some decisions, even by the Ninth Circuit, have construed it quite narrowly to require, you know, an actual intent to deceive, if you look closely at the language of Nathan, it uses the word or the phrase constructive knowledge. And as I've argued in the brief, in other words, that the person whose actions are being relied upon, it's sufficient if that person constructively knew.
But it requires a showing of improper purpose, right?
Well, constructive knowledge, I submit, does not require improper purpose in terms of intentional misleading, but rather it's more like a negligence standard. In other words, if the person who's being relied upon should have known, that's constructive knowledge, that they were going to be, their conduct was going to mislead the relying party, then that under Nathan is sufficient. And we have that in the facts here. Because, and I'm focusing on the three different occasions that persons in the personnel office of Covenant looked at forms that laid out the 3-month time period that my client mistakenly thought she was entitled to and was seeking, July 1 to October 1. The first occasion was when Cindy Johnson saw the initial application for an interview to discuss the FMLA application, and had my client's application form right there, giving those dates in handwriting, large. The second occasion was when my client brought back the medical certification from her mother's doctor, where the mother's doctor had dutifully followed my client's indication of the dates she wanted, and handwrote right in the middle of the form, in not tiny print, July 1 to October 1. Cindy Johnson, the person who initially had interviewed my client, saw that, saw the form, it's a single-page form, and sent it back because of the doctor having incorrectly checked off no at the bottom in terms of whether mom really needed help.
But was are those definite misrepresentations? I mean, these circumstances.
Well, they're not intentional misrepresentations.
Are they misrepresentations at all?
Well, it's misleading conduct. It's not an affirmative representation. Granted that, but we have cases that I've cited where silence by an employer can be misleading, and that suffices. That's what we have here. Silence in the face of three occasions when those dates are put right squarely before the eyes of people in the personnel office.
But that was still in the process before approval. I think you would have a different case if there had been a signature or an okay from someone with those dates there.
Well, granted, we don't have unconditional approval, but we do have conditional approval twice. Cindy Johnson, when she gives my client the medical certification form saying, go have your doctor fill this out, she tells my client that once the doctor correctly fills out this form, you've got your leave. No ifs, ands, or buts. Single qualification. In a way, it's a little bit like the last case where there was a clear exception with the attorney's fees. Here, there was a clear qualification, clearly delineated about what next had to be done in order to have her leave.
Your client, speaking of what people should know, your client knew, I think, or should have known, there's going to be a letter coming regarding her leave. And as far as I can tell, she didn't do a single thing to see to it that she got the letter. The letter, for all we know, could have said, your leave is denied. I don't know what it was going to say. And she couldn't possibly know what it was going to say. And she goes off for 4 months, makes herself unavailable. Somebody's even at home receiving her mail during part of that time. Nobody bothers. She doesn't care. Nobody cares. She doesn't make any effort to find out, what is that reasonable reliance? How does she get reasonable reliance out of that?
She was reasonable in believing the letter would be a routine grant of the leave.
Never mind routine. She's getting a letter, and it's even sent certified, I think. I mean, the company has made it quite clear. Your leave is what comes when you get the letter. Then we tell you exactly what the deal is. And she's gone through the process before, if I recall correctly. She's taken leave before and gotten the letter. This time, she just doesn't even bother.
They told her to expect it.
Yeah.
Yes. And
she told her to respect the letter, and she just wanted to, she doesn't even care. How can that be reasonable reliance?
Well, when she's told by two different persons in the personnel office that clearing up the medical certification is all you need to have your leave, the question is whether is she reasonable in taking those words spoken to her face by face twice sufficient to go on her trip without checking what essentially would be a form letter.
But there wasn't a representation regarding how much leave would be awarded.
Well, we have sets of eyes by the personnel office being placed on forms filled out by my client and by her doctor, the medical certification, saying 3 months. And when they say, your leave's going to be granted, just have the doctor check the right box. Implicit in that, and I submit reasonably implicit in that, is that there was a tacit approval of the 3 months. Let me reserve what little time I have left.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Joe. My name is Joe Schwachter. I'm appearing on behalf of the defendant, Appley Covenant Aviation. Following the lead of other counsel, if the court has any questions you're looking to focus on, otherwise I'll present my argument. The court is correct that this case is controlled by Nathan v. California, and Nathan v. Bank of California and its progeny. Nathan has been applied by the circuit in a number of employment cases. The Ninth Circuit has actually never applied equitable estoppel at all in FMLA, family medical leave cases. Not to say that it cannot, but it has not. In Nathan v. Bank of California, as the court is aware, the requirement is that not only does the plaintiff have to show actual and reasonable reliance, but also, as the court said, important is evidence of an improper purpose or a deceptive nature. And the lower court found that there was no evidence at all of any deceptive nature, and plaintiff's counsel reiterated this morning that they do not even contend that there is evidence of a deceptive nature.
Let me ask you something about Nathan. Nathan dealt with statements made that the person relied upon, let's say, in not filing a claim within the statute of limitations.
That's right.
Right?
Mm. That's a procedural issue.
That's what Nathan was about.
Yes.
This case doesn't have to do with filing a claim within the statute of limitations. It has to do with, let's say, hypothetically, being told you have, let me pick a different example, an example. You have 6 months being FMLA leave, and the person comes back after six months, and they say, oops, you didn't have 6 months because you're not entitled to it and you're fired. Okay? Is there any anomaly or disconnect in playing Nathan to this set of facts?
No. First of all, Your Honor, in this case, there is no representation like you suggest. Ms. Chabon conceded during her deposition, which I took, that in neither meeting with HR did HR ever even talk about the dates of her leave.
You're not talking to me about Nathan now. You're talking to me about something else. You're talking about misrepresentations or reliance. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Nathan mm-hmm. only. Mm-hmm. Is there an anomaly implying Nathan to a situation where, stipulate for the moment, horror of horrors.
Okay.
We decided, you know what? There was a representation. Now, it doesn't matter how you put it. Is there a problem implying Nathan if there were a representation?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because in not only in Nathan, but in every case since Nathan, in a variety of circumstances, be it immigration law or the age discrimination, in all of those cases.
That's the government.
Right.
The government, of course, we all know is unique. In fact, Heckler basically said. Heckler kind of talked about the restatement rule, but by way of saying, well, you've got to at least have that, but anyway, with the government, they've got to be especially bad. Right. So government cases don't sort of count in the alchemy, do they?
I agree.
So back to Nathan.
I'm sorry?
Back to Nathan.
I don't see that there was any representation that was made. So you don't even have the basic elements of equitable estoppel to apply the doctrine. Even if you took away Nathan.
You mean in this case?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Come into my cosmos for a moment, okay? Come out of the real world mm-hmm. and into mine.
Okay.
And in my world, there was a representation. Let's just say.
Okay.
This is hypothetical.
Absolutely.
So let's say there was a representation.
Okay.
Okay? Now, Let's talk about Nathan. How does the statute of limitations argument come over to the misrepresentation argument? Are you with me?
I'm sorry?
Are you with me?
Yes, yes.
So?
Well, I think there are different situations. And depending on what there's a statute of limitations and you're not familiar with what the statute is or you act on reliance on what you believe it is, as opposed to in this case where I understand your analogy, but there is no basis there's no basis for applying equitable estoppel even without Nathan. So I understand you're saying there's a difference between a procedural issue in terms of Nathan and a substantive issue as we're talking here, but I don't see the difference, and particularly given that this court has applied that test in a variety of situations, not just on statute of limitations purposes.
So are you saying we should apply Nathan to the analysis of this case?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So what about opposing counsel's reliance on Heckler to limit Nathan?
Well, first of all, as Justice Fernandez pointed out,
you know, we're not justices. They say there is no justice in the Ninth Circuit.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. As Judge Fernandez pointed out, the Supreme Court actually did use those words, at least, that you must at least prove actual and reasonable reliance as a minimum. The Ninth Circuit rule is not in conflict with that. In fact, the Ninth Circuit is not singular in using the Nathan test. We pointed out in our brief the Fourth Circuit uses it, so does the First Circuit and the Seventh Circuit. There are a number of circuits that use that test. The court correctly applied Nathan, and there is actually the alternative argument about that the defendant knew the deceptive nature of his conduct. There is no deceptive nature. Even taking what plaintiff's counsel said to you this morning, talks about two meetings or three meetings, two with Ms. Johnson at the beginning, when any representation she made were negated by the fact that she sent out a letter specifically telling Ms. Chabon that her leave was denied.
Yeah. Well, what about the fact that the application went through several submissions where the dates were clearly listed? Is there any kind of significance to that fact?
No. First of all, when any HR department looks at a leave form, the first thing that you're going to look at is whether or not the person is eligible for the leave. And then secondly, you'll see what the dates that they want to take. When all of these meetings concerned was whether she was she eligible for the leave. And even in the second meeting, or the meeting with Ms. Harris and Ms. Singh, after the letter from Ms. Johnson was sent out denying the leave, they explained to her that, yes, the leave was denied because your doctor checked the box and said your care wasn't needed. And if you want, you could go back and get the form corrected. But you need the doctor to explain the reasons for the switch. And Ms. Chabon conceded that in her declaration opposing summary judgment.
Well, in one of my former lives, I was an HR person. And when you get a form, you look at every part of it. You don't just isolate on one part of the form. You check it because you don't want to go back and say, this is right, this is right, this is wrong. You don't want to do that seriatim. You want to look at the entire form and give the person one response as to what the person needs to do. So I find it a little hard to believe that nobody looked at the date.
Well, in assessing FMLA, family and medical leave, the first thing, there are a number of factors that make an employee eligible or ineligible for leave. So that's the first thing.
And one of those is how much time are you eligible for? Because not everyone is necessarily eligible for the entire period of time. So that's one of the important things.
That's right. And you know, to that point, Judge Breyer made a comment during oral argument. He said that if Ms. Chabon had not put any end date on her application, if she had just put July 1st and not put an end date, would that entitle Ms. Chabon, I think my time is coming up, would that entitle Ms. Chabon to indefinite leave forever? That doesn't make sense.
But that's different than when you actually have a finite date listed.
And quite frankly, when you first look at July 1st to October 1st, unless you look at a calendar, it looks okay. So
that's why you have specialists who are supposed to make sure that it's in compliance with the law.
And it was redone. And when it was redone, wasn't it redone by the personnel?
It was actually redone by the HR department because Ms. Chabon left without having her doctor explain the reason why one day she said yes and another day she said no. So the HR department went out on their own after calling Ms. Chabon on her cell phone and her home phone and not being able to reach her, and took it upon themselves to make certain that she got the leave. Absolutely. And then as soon as they saw that she was eligible because of their own work, they immediately notified her. They called her. They did everything they could to notify her. They do not use email for health information. But they, and her husband was home, and they not only sent these letters certified, but they also sent them regular mail. While the certified were returned, the regular were not.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
Yes, just a couple of further points. As to equitable estoppel, you were asking me about my client perhaps seeming to be cavalier and just traipsing off to Egypt for several months. But I think the proper perspective to look at this through is the knowledge that was contained in that personnel office. She told the first two people that she met with, Nina Cox and then Cindy Johnson, Nina Cox for the vacation and Cindy Johnson for the start of the FMLA application, that she was going to be going to Egypt to accompany her mother. That was, and she told Nina Cox when she was getting the first piece into place, the vacation that was going to be in front of the FMLA time period, of her personal email address. And Nina Cox used that to approve that first piece of the entire period of time. These are all people in the same personnel office suite. You know, there's a principle that, you know, that whatever the agent knows, the principal knows. Whatever, I mean, this knowledge was contained within a small sector of Covenant, and in any event, they were all agents of Covenant acting within their duties. Covenant knew that she was in Egypt. Covenant knew that she had a personal email address, and it's reasonable to say that that personal email address was a promising, a plausible way to reach her once the certified letters were coming back.
Consistent with health care information, that information is not usually transmitted by email because of the inability to guarantee that it's confidential. So I'm not sure that that's a good argument.
Well, It was in fact used to transmit information that her vacation period was approved up until
vacation is different than FMLA.
She was told to expect the written notification of that, wasn't she, of the FMLA leave?
She was told that a letter was coming. She didn't say make sure that she wasn't told make sure to read it or make sure to
well,
open it up.
Well, it would be her approval or not. It would be something she would read. It would be her approval, right? She was told to get written notification of her leave approval.
Or a routine confirmation of the approval that she received verbally twice talking to them.
All right, counsel. We understand your argument. You've exceeded your time. We understand your
5
argument.
5 seconds. I just want to point out.
5 seconds.
Equitable tolling is my second argument. I believe that her conduct looked at through the prism of equitable tolling, which
all
is
right,
from.
Thank you, counsel. We understand your argument.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.